This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Our Master Cheesemaker program is one of the only two in the world. So it's no wonder every master in America has called Wisconsin home. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
I'm Southern Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Gentlemen, the year-end roundup at The Speakeasy.
Absolutely. Yes, this is our traditional year-end roundup that we've been doing for some years. And, you know, it's the biggest show in the biz. You know, it's like, it's just, it's kind of like the Mariah Carey Christmas special, but for booze.
Yeah, I love it.
The people have been lining up for 12 months just waiting for it.
It's, yeah, highly anticipated. Yeah.
Wait, but the Mariah Carey thing is about booze too, right? All I want for Christmas is booze. Isn't that what she's singing?
Yeah.
That's what I sing whenever I sing along.
It's
closing time at whatever miracle pop-up I happen to be at.
It's all I want for Christmas is Suze.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's going to come up again and again and again in this conversation. Well,
it's been coming up for me, coming back up. No, I'm kidding. Oh man, there's been, you know, this being our second, yeah, I guess our second Christmas holiday season in COVID. It's interesting to see, and we're going to talk a lot about this today, like how businesses have adapted. We're not going to say pivot, even though I just did, because we're sick of that word, right? But you know, and not only that, just like the business side of it, but you know, some different trends that happen, and also, you know, just the general kind of attitude and consumers and customers at the bar and bartenders and chefs and waiters. And, you know, it's been interesting to see this year, and still somewhat dumbed down from before, but you know, things have actually, I mean, like I'm the silver lining guy on the show, so I should be really positive about this, but it's been interesting to see how people have fun and kind of move forward and up during a pandemic, right?
Yeah, I think we've bounced back considerably, but of course we're not, you know, back to what we envision as a good time out and about, you know, as it was pre-COVID. We've certainly changed the landscape in a lot of ways, both in physical structures of the places that we visit and the ways we have to visit. You know, we have to present vaccination and ID everywhere we go, and you know, lots of places still require masks and you know, we're still rebounding from this thing. And even today, you know, I know we're going to talk about a year-end wrap-up, but even today, I just got a message from Todd, who, you know, is over at NYU, and he says the campus decided today to shut down. So that's two in New York, Columbia and NYU both shut down their campuses again due to Omicron climbing numbers, et cetera. So, but yeah, I think we're definitely coming back. It's just and not unexpectedly so, right? I remember on one of the shows earlier this year talking about an article that I had read that called this the hammer and dance. You hammer down on lockdowns or restrictions or what have you, and then as things seem to right themselves, you slowly step out and start doing a little dancing, and then, you know, something spikes and you have to hammer down again. I think those cycles are moving much wider now, it seems. We don't hammer for as long and we dance longer, whereas in the earlier days it was more hammer, less dance, right?
Yeah, I mean, here in you know, Marin County in the Bay Area, we just got another spike in cases, right? But like, we're still in our second phase of, or second time around, second round of maskless interaction. So like, for instance, like yesterday I went to grab a drink for happy hour, and this one particular place, like, it's not even the other kind of dance, right, where it's like, oh, you put on the mask for the 5 feet from the front door to the bar stool. They just no one's wearing masks, right? But Marin also has like a very, like, probably one of the lowest COVID rates in the country. And so that's why they're able to say, well, you know what, we can go maskless now. And also like one of the highest vaccination rates in the country too. So it's interesting, like kind of like living in this kind of like back and forth here. I know that New York was kind of like doing something of the same, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For instance, at my company-wide, since Omicron became visible on the radar, we decided that staff would go back to being masked up. For a long time, we had said, you know, everyone had to be vaccinated, of course, because we can't mandate that people coming in to visit us are vaccinated if we aren't, right? That breaks the chain. So, of course, that mandate meant that everyone who works in hospitality had to be vaccinated. So we're all 100% vaccinated. And we got to the place where we said, well, as staff, we can choose to wear a mask or not, whatever you think you're comfortable with. And I would say the majority of folks decided to go maskless. But as soon as Omicron came on the scene, we mandated that everybody in our establishments go mask on at all times again. So again, we're doing our due diligence. And we're not without incident, right? Currently, my GM at the complex where Maury Margot and Cafe de l'Enfer and Loggia are is out for a 10-day quarantine because he tested positive. And then we had two other people test positive. So, you know, I've been working extra hard, and especially during the holiday season where it's, you know, extra busy because we're shorthanded again because of this. So, you know, we're at the deepest part of the water, I think, but we're not out of the water yet.
Right. Craig, what's it like? You're in Washington, D.C. right now, correct?
I am in Washington, D.C. right now, yeah, which is it's still as of the – I mean, I haven't been able to go out very much just because it's been a very busy week for me. But the last time I was here, there was still an indoor mask mandate. And I know this because whenever my friend would come up to visit me in New York, anytime he'd go into like, you know, even like going out for bagels in the morning, he'd be like, oh, I don't have to wear a mask inside. This is so great. But yeah, I mean, just kind of looking at the year in review, I think about when we started doing this last year, when we couldn't book a guest for the last show of the year and turn it into a beloved holiday tradition that people wait for all year long now.
yeah, that's us.
I was thinking about how we were talking about, like, you know, in 2020, like, oh, when we get to the new normal, like, what's the new normal going to look like? And I think the new normal is probably, if this year has showed us anything, it's just that hammer and dance cycle, you know? It's like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Like, it's bad, it's good, it's bad, it's good. We're on, cases are falling, you know, we did it. Oh no, wait, they're rising again. Crap, this is never going away. Everybody take to Twitter and express your outraged opinions about vaccinations and masks one way or the other. Go. And it's, I don't know, it's at a point where I'm realizing that we're just going to be doing this for a long, long, long time. And it would be easier, I think, if we could all just get on the same page that this is a public health crisis that needs to be dealt with seriously and not some sort of assault on our God-given liberties. You know, that's the mm-hmm. that's the part that still bothers and worries me, honestly, at this point more than the virus, because we have tools to fight the virus. But until there's a vaccination against, you know, Newsmax, we're still going to have to deal with this issue.
Right.
Yeah, agreed. I think this is, I mean, I don't see myself as a New Yorker. I don't foresee a future where I don't have a mask in my pocket at all times so that I can put one on to get on the subway or put one on when I'm in a crowded space. I don't know that I'll ever get on an airplane without a mask again. You know what I mean? Like, ever is a long time, of course, but like not in the foreseeable future. Right.
Yeah. And I, you know, as long as the flights so far that I've been on aren't serving drinks, which has been a really huge bummer.
You need to get on better flights, Damon.
I know. I was going to say, the only way I could take my mask off is if there were drinks. And so far, there haven't been any. So, and going to fun places like Las Vegas and Hawaii, there should be drinks on the flights, especially the long flight to Hawaii. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Southern. Like, there's always a mask in my pocket, whether it's mandated at a business or not. It's like, I always, you know, we're conditioned now where it's like you always put it on just in case, even if there's a lift on the mask. It always goes on when I'm hitting the front door of a business.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just part of society now. It's part of life. I don't think it's going to go away in a foreseeable time. You know, we're talking 5-7 years, maybe even a decade, 10 years. I don't know. But, you know, the hope is, of course, that one day we'll be to a place where we don't have to fear, you know, somewhat for our lives. I don't feel like I fear for my life, but you put that thing on and there's some disconnect between the connection between other humans. You know, you mm-hmm. can't see their face. It's a little bit of hidden, which of course also this past year we saw a lot of, you know, virtual cocktailing being done, right? Yeah. I know I personally stopped when I hit 42 virtual Zoom style classes/tastings, and they just exhausted me. At first there was a part that was good where it was like, okay, I had been sort of out of touch with connection with people over drinks as a service, you know, member. And so it was like, oh, this feels good to like reconnect and chat with people. But then I realized it was still so stilted and disconnected that I just couldn't do them anymore. I don't know if you guys had a lot of experience with that, but I cut it off at 42.
I kind of like them, but that's just me. But that's just because I like being lazy and not having to leave my home sometimes.
Yeah. But I mean, anyone who's been at your bar knows that you don't really like doing much.
No, that's true. I guess that is, it's a continuation of my natural MO. But I also, I mean, I enjoyed granted, I didn't do 42 of them, but for the, you know, 24 or so that I did, I enjoyed being able to tap into that energy that I missed from being behind the bar, and being able to kind of be, you know, get up on that stage again. I guess it's the chance to have that spotlight on you that I think all of us that go into this industry crave on some level or another. And not everybody likes it in the same way, not everybody wants it in the same way, but I think we all enjoy it in our own individualized ways. And for me, I was able to get that by at least, you know, doing that in front of my laptop instead of behind a bar. But I could also see where that wouldn't be everybody's experience, you know. Especially for the bar that you've built. I mean, it's such a clubhouse. I can imagine that you would miss it so when you weren't able to be there.
Yeah, I mean, surely what you just described is what drew me into doing them in the first place. But I feel like I guess overwhelmingly my distaste for them came from, if you're in my space, I have control over kind of everything. But when I'm dealing with, let's say, 40 people on a screen that are in 40 different places, you know, and I say, pick up your shaker tin, and, you know, 8 of them say, I don't have a shaker tin. You know, okay, then use a mason jar. I don't have a mason jar. It was the constant, I guess in the beginning, I was overambitious with the classes that I was trying to offer. Because I had a greater expectation of what people would have on hand. So suddenly I found myself in positions where I was like, well, the class is supposed to last 2 hours and we're supposed to get 4 drinks made, but because of the slowdowns along the way, we only got 2 drinks made in 2 hours, you know? So I had to readjust everything. I don't know. It was great to reconnect with people in that way, especially in that time when it was kind of, you know, dark and dreary and I had no connection with human beings. Because don't forget, we were operating the bar, but we were so separate. We were people were outside. So I would be inside mixing drinks and I'd have another bartender with me who would be running the drinks outside. So I had no connection to the people. You know, it's basically like I was disconnected.
Yeah. I mean, something I learned like really kind of, I want to say early on, but we've been doing this for a long time. Since this is the year and wrap up show, I'll say last winter, is really actually about the time that I figured this out. But you know, when we talk about like just going to a bar, right? Just the experience of going out to a bar, you can drink for a lot cheaper at home, you know, than what you get charged for the food and the drinks. You can cook for a lot cheaper. A lot less money. But the thing is, what you're getting out of it is the experience of being out and talking to people and communicating, socializing. So I had to like put myself rather than behind the bar. I was thinking about this in a different way. I was like, you know what? If I'm sitting at the bar or if I'm at the bar, how many people am I actually talking to at one time? It's definitely not 40. I mean, right. you can have, I mean, I don't have that many bar stools at Grand Army. I've got, you know, 14 or 16, depending on how tight. But I put myself in the customer position, right? I'm sitting at a bar stool. Who am I talking to? I'm talking to, across the bar to the bartender. Maybe there's two bartenders I get to chat with, but then I've got like one or two people on either side of me. That's six people, right? So when I started doing, I started thinking about these classes in that way, and I was like, okay, so I'm going to limit this to five or six people because that's how many people can actually hold a conversation. When you go on a motorcycle ride, there's this old saying that like for every person you add to the group, it's going to add an hour to get to your destination. and it's true because like, especially if you ride old Harleys like me, it's like, and my friends, like someone breaks down like pretty much every hour, you know, like and you're on the side of the road trying to wrench on that thing and get it started. And or it's like, you know, especially old choppers, they have small gas tanks and like you have to stop for gas more often and like someone's got to pee or like, you know, whatever it is, you know, like the more people you add, the more time it takes. And that's certainly evident with what you were describing because you were saying that like, you know, these people, it was kind of like their motorcycles breaking down. Like, oh, I don't have a shaker tent. I don't have a mason jar. I don't mm-hmm. have a bar spoon. So I started limiting it to, you know, five, six people tops. And that way you can actually have a conversation with everyone. They can be in the conversation together just in the same way, the same setting you would find socially at a bar, right? So I think it's interesting to see that, like, even though, you know, we've done a lot of virtual stuff over the past, like, almost 2 years, we've also had to refine that, you know, and make that work better. And you know, I think you've probably done some of these too, but, like, you know, I know that people were offering like kind of like one-on-one classes and stuff. I mean, for me, like the 4 to 6 people like per engagement, it really, really proved to be successful.
Yeah. And I guess this brings me to sort of a fundamental question that I wanted to ask in, as we did our year in review show, because, you know, last year,
world,
I
mean, famous year this, in review.
Show. Yes. Yeah, our long awaited, the 75th annual Speakeasy Year in Review show. can't believe it's been going on that long already. It feels like it was just last year. But, you know, last year was just such a punch in the gut. We had so much to talk about because so much had changed from the beginning of that year. And this year I was kind of thinking like, okay, like what's different? Because like you look back on 2021 and it was like, oh, it's getting better. Wait, no, it's not. Oh, you know, you can sit at a bar or you can go back inside and then you can sit at the bar and then you can take your mask off and you have to put your mask back on and all these other things. And I'm sort of thinking to myself, like, what is the major through line of this year? Because you look back on it and there are a lot of ways you could look back on it and think, well, here we are again. You know, I don't want to minimize the transformative effect that the vaccines have had on our daily lives, because my God, have they ever. Think back to last year. And we only got those midway through 2021. But it does also feel in a lot of ways like we've, you know, come back around to the starting line again. And the one thing that I'm thinking of is like, what has changed about my experience of being in a bar? Like, I honestly have wondered this about myself and my experiences over and over again. And I don't know if it's that I can't remember back that far or if we're all just our own worst judges of ourselves objectively, but I honestly can't figure out if it feels different or if my relationship with like sitting down at a bar with a beer is different than it was this time 2 years ago. And I wanted to sort of pose that very navel-gazy question to the two of you guys. Like, does it still feel the same, or does it feel like it's changed in some fundamental way that maybe we haven't even lived long enough to put our fingers on yet?
I mean, I'm still pretty limited in the places that I'm willing to go. And let's use Bar Goto as my example, because I go there on Sundays again. Church is back in session. Gibbs Sunday, we call it now.
it needed a new branding.
Thank you, Mr. Resler. How did we not come up with that over the years? But I would say, you know, most notably for me is I am sitting in the same spot that I like to sit. I am drinking and enjoying the same things that I like to drink and enjoy. I personally am a little less engaging with the people around me if I don't know them. And I would think that that is a two-way street. The people around me, and I notice it in my own places, aren't the people, you know, the people that are just in bars, they aren't as engaging with one another. I think there's a hesitancy to be chatty, whereas that obviously didn't used to exist. And that could be totally wrong. Again, my experiences are pretty limited. I go to Subject, which is now all, you know, Brian really excelled at making the place efficient for COVID. So it's all sort of cut up. So when you go there, you're pocketed with the people you came with. You don't really have a lot of space or room to interact with people around you. And those are the two places that I really go other than my own spots. That's what I'm seeing. So I don't know if it's, you know, as deep as a fundamental change, but it's a change that's palpable for me.
You know, I would say that I kind of agree with you, but I haven't been in New York for a little bit, but I what I've seen, at least out here in California, is that when I go out to bars and I'm sitting there at the bar, I am kind of like uncomfortable in the sense that I've forgotten how, not fully, but because I'm still a social person, but it's kind of jarring to me how many people kind of like approach me and do want to chat. You know, like I've kind of like forgotten how to handle that, you know, because I think, you know, California's been pretty, well, especially where I live, it's been really good about COVID. So like, you know, as I mentioned before, there's like not currently a mask mandate in Marin. I think it's coming back soon though, but it's, I have to like relearn how to like have small talk with strangers, basically. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's exactly what's happening. So I don't know if that's going to, what sort of effect that'll have long term on our sociability as humans, you know?
Yeah, we've kind of like, I mean, obviously we're still working to get over it, but we're also learning how to live with it. You know, as you'd said, you know, kind of like just in the simplest way of like always having a mask in your pocket. But let's talk about something else, because I like, you know, taking these lemons and making lemonade or whiskey sour, if you're you know, me. Man, the parklet game. Let's talk about that, because like it's like a lot of these parklets are here to stay, depending on like the city or the county or state. But man, I've seen some like just insane parklets, like more designy than the actual bar or restaurant they're attached to. Yeah. It's pretty crazy, man.
It's insane, and I would include myself. I don't know if you've seen any photos yet of what we're doing at Loggia by Amore Margo. So we've created these little individual lodge rooms, you know, decked out with you know, wintry decor, not holiday, but winter, because this is going to go on all the way through the winter, not just the holidays. And they're private, you know, with their own door and everything, and their own heater. We got blankets in there for you to cozy up with, and we're doing, you know, so yeah, kind of more designed and decorated than the bar itself ever was. And then, you know, we're doing a whole different program out there, which is something we've never done indoor, which is we're offering a whole list of hot drinks that use Amaro, vermouth, and bitters, and Caldo Amaro. And then we're even doing s'mores. I rigged up this little unit that we can have a tiny personal bonfire in this little stone. I took the old metal punch bowls that we used to have up at Cienfuegos, and I filled them with little stones, and I put this little fire in there, and I can bring out some marshmallows and graham crackers, and of course bitter chocolate. At least that stays with our brand a little bit. So the bitter chocolate s'mores are available. And that's just
chartreuse marshmallows.
No, I can't go that far this time around. I don't have a stand mixer for whipping up marshmallows.
He just wants all the chartreuse to himself. That's the,
and honestly,
it's in the shower.
Well, we talked a little bit about chartreuse a couple weeks ago, right? About what's changing with those guys. Anyway, so that's just mine, right? And I'm looking around, and you're right, Damon. I'm seeing some of these things that are just, they're they're over the top. They're, some of them are quite beautiful, which then sadly for me puts in stark contrast the ones that are not beautiful.
Sure, sure.
Right. Yeah. So suddenly the streets look like, you know, I said it earlier too, but like sort of a shanty town, you know, some of these like beautiful, well-appointed, decked out parklets next to these ones that are like literally built out of, you know, shipping crates and pallets, you know?
Yeah. Well, they started out as like a survival necessity, you know, and then when we started realizing that they were here, seemingly here to stay, it, you know, a lot of places started up in the game. I mean, we certainly did that at Grand Army. We have like planters and like electricity and like, you know, like there's ceiling fans and like all this kind of stuff. Like that parklet's going to stick around for a long time, you know? And so we were like, fuck it. Like we can't be, I mean, we it's a point of pride, right? We're that place in the neighborhood that, you know, these people have shared a lot of their life experience with us, and we take a lot of pride in our bar. So we, you know, we decided to extend that and not have like just some afterthought in front of the bar. And also that's another thing. It's like, these things are like in front of your business. They're essentially blocking the view of the beautiful thing that you built. So you should make that just as beautiful, because that's essentially what people are even all they're seeing.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. As you drive down the street or take your bike or walk, you can't see the actual space for the parklet. And if the parklet doesn't have any identifying markers or design features that match up to the space, then you can easily breeze past places that you can't see anything about them. So you don't,
Saying this, like maybe
it's like having your gate down at all times.
Yeah. It's like, there should probably be a Tales of the Cocktail Spirited Award for best parklet. Just saying. I mean, since it feels like they're here to stay. So like, let's make it an official thing. Like let's take it from being this kind of like negative, kind of like bummer of a thing and spin it into a positive. And also that might encourage some people to up their game.
It kind of reminds me of, there was during the westward expansion of, you know, what we now know as the United States of America, there was a port city that basically like was just built on the wreckage of old ships. Like still to this day, like there are like, as buildings are being built, they are excavating these like hulls of ships that basically just got there, weren't seaworthy anymore, were left to rot, and then kind of like the entire town was built up on top of it, and now we call it San Francisco.
Right.
So, you know, I love them. I've come on the record on the show before of being loudly and proudly in favor of the parklets, because I enjoy the sort of they hit a lot of sweet spots for me. You know, I enjoy being able to watch them evolve and change in real time. Like, you know, a building is a very static thing. You know, you can change your storefront all you want, but at the end of the day, you're kind of stuck with the actual bones of the place you got. But it's nice watching these things change and evolve and, you know, go from being these sort of, the first fish to ever breathe out of water, these just like gross little shanty town things, to actually being nice, well put together, well thought out pieces of architecture. I like them because some of them remind me of, you know, they hit a little bit of a nostalgia spot for me of like, you know, back in the very early days, drinking in places where you weren't supposed to. Like it feels like you're kind of getting away with something a little bit, drinking on these wooden boards, and you have to keep your coat on, and it's in this kind of improvised space, and I like that. But I also just enjoy the sort of symbol of resilience that they are, you know, the right idea that there is, you know, this has sucked. There is no two ways about that, but it's a nice, it's a way for these businesses that have just hung on by their fingertips to not only still be there, but to thrive and to have a new way to surprise and delight their guests. I don't know. That's my dose of silver lining for today. We're going to take a quick break here, leave you on a slightly more upper note, and hear a little bit from our sponsors. But we will be right back with the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. So stay tuned.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. In Wisconsin, cheese is our thing. Wisconsin is the only state in the country that requires a license to make cheese. From curds to cheddar, blue to brick, Wisconsin cheesemakers can do it all. We blend tradition with innovation to create an incredible variety of cheeses that you just can't get anywhere else. You've heard of a PhD, but have you heard of a PH cheese? Otherwise known as the Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker Program. This rigorous study of cheese is an elite accomplishment earned by only 80 talented cheesemakers in Wisconsin, and the program is only one of two in the world. Becoming a master cheesemaker takes 13 years and is basically like a doctorate in a specific variety of cheese, with intense requirements to succeed. Our Master Cheesemaker program allows makers to perfect both the art and science of their craft in a tradition so rich you can taste it. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. This is our world famous end of year wrap up show. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about, like, you know, obviously the major topics of the year are, you know, we're still in a pandemic. We're dealing with it in certain ways, some better than others. But we were just talking about a positive thing about the parklets. We should raise some funds for a Heritage Radio Network, the Speakeasy Parklet Hall of Fame. Create a museum out of these things whenever we go back to normal and they don't have anywhere to go. Actually, you know, what would be kind of fun is, I think it's like somewhere, it's in downtown Brooklyn, but it's like, you know, it's a bunch of old shipping containers that they turn into shops and kind mm-hmm. of like pop-up restaurants and whatnot.
Be kind of cool. Heritage Radio Network?
Yeah, that too. But yeah. But if we had like a lot somewhere where everyone could move their parklets and continue, and we'd have like a parklet park. It was like you could visit all these bars in like one place, kind of like Smorgasburg. That would be, I don't know, that's for another show maybe. But yeah, so we definitely, like, we've seen a lot of growth in kind of like upping of the game with parklets. But man, let's talk about drinks over this past year. You know, like, I obviously, to go along with that, we're talking about to-go cocktails and kind of like the legalities jumping around and coming in and coming out. And aside from the legality of to-go cocktails and how people have changed the drinking culture, as it were, during this time, seeing a lot of really interesting kind of programming too, where I don't know if this is necessarily across the board, but, you know, I've really noticed a lot of, you know, we already had the low and no ABV cocktail kind of thing swelling up, right? But then also highballs really coming into play a lot. I've really noticed a lot of bars offering kind of like simpler, straight to the point cocktails. You know, it's like we've kind of like gone away from like really insane, like molecular things like foams and whatnot, but like it's kind of like, you know what, you deserve a strong, simple drink. Here it is.
I think we even on the air here predicted something like that in the beginning, where yeah. we were like, I think people are going to come back, or as they come back, we're still coming back, they're going to be seeking out comfort. Just as we saw with food during this, people wanted comfort foods, you know, mm-hmm. things that nourished them and made them feel, you know, comfortable and whole. I think that's the same thing with drinks. We've really kind of twisted the clock back again to this land of classics, and
yeah.
you know, I wouldn't say no fuss or no muss. We're still fussy about our products, but they're definitely a lot more, you know, familiar, approachable, you right. know, it's, we're really seeing, you know, Manhattans and Negronis and Gibsons and, you know, it's.
Yeah. I mean, at Grand Army, we definitely, like, we are back in the game of like having our themed menus. Right now it's all cats.
Yeah.
And people are freaking out about it. But, you know, at the beginning of this all, when we were only able to do to go food and drinks, we were like, you know what, we're not going to have a theme menu. We're not going to like do all this crazy shit. We're just going to have the two drinks that people want the most. We're going to have a spicy margarita and we're going to have a Negroni. both to go. And you know what? People were so thankful. They're like, dude, this is all anyone really wants right now. But they want a drink when they want something kind of like simple and familiar and comfortable, like you said. And you know, who doesn't like those two drinks? And especially when you're walking around, you know, in the cold winter months in New York, it's like having like kind of a more bracing, bitter cocktail like a Negroni, or on the flip side, something really refreshing, but also with a little spice to it. You know, it really worked out for us. We didn't serve anything hot, which would have been great, but we, you know, kind of like you don't have the stand mixer to make the marshmallows. We didn't have like a FETCO tower, you know, to heat up a cocktail, but yeah, it's interesting to see where we were last winter to where we are now. And I mean, honestly, I know we've talked about a lot of like kind of downer things today on this show. It's not meant to be that way. But I mean, if you look back to 1 year ago, I mean, out here in California, we were in a shutdown. This time of year during the holiday season at the peak, we got shut down and we weren't even allowed to do outdoor dining or drinks at all. So, I mean, we're in a pretty fucking good place compared to that right now. I have to say, I got to throw that silver lining out there.
We can talk about a lot of positive things. You know, we've seen the resurgence of cocktail conventions like BCB, Tales of the Cocktail, 50 Best just happened a couple of days ago. Lots of folks were in London on December, 7th, the day after Repeal Day, which also there were celebrations for that. So, you know, we're definitely not out of it. But we're certainly not in that darkest place we were that we were having to get used to for a while.
We're just continually
adjusting.
Yeah. And now we have motherfucking Mountain Sues. I mean, like, where was that a year ago?
It wasn't even a twinkle in anyone's eye. I do have some breaking news regarding Mountain Sues.
Really?
Yeah. Last night, I was on not a Zoom thing, but more of a corporate cocktail event. It was a 20s themed party where they had to get out of an escape room to find their way into the speakeasy where I was to coach them through drinks. But we sent them all the equipment, so they had everything they needed. It turns out that the corporate client was some of the higher ups from Taco Bell.
Which is
a Pepsi house, which carries Mountain Dew. So I brought this up to them. Mountain Sues. And even as we were on the screen, I could see them all. And I told them, you know, I had a video that went semi-viral and it got in the press and then a t-shirt was made. And, you know, once you tell someone a t-shirt got made, you know, it's a real thing. So they were looking up the video and I was saying, you know, I know you guys carry Mountain Dew. If you got to get some Sues into the cantinas, Taco Bell cantina. So, you know, I got my fingers crossed. I'm not so naive as to believe it's definitely going to happen, but you know, I dropped that seed. So we'll see.
I mean, you could tell them that Ross from Friends is a regular at your bar and you've served them to him.
Schwimmer.
Dave Schwimmer. Dude, that's amazing. So like, yeah, you know, there's actually one of the, I think it is the first one. It's in Pacifica, which is like right just south of San Francisco, which I've been to. That's the first, I think it was the first Taco Bell cantina. And, you know, it's like one of those things where you didn't know that you needed it until it popped up. And then you're like, oh God, you know, it'd be really great with this Dorito crunchy wrap thing. It's like, I need a Mountain Sues. I can actually order one here.
I will say one of the higher ups, when I told her about it, when I told the whole group about it, she exclaimed, would it work with Baja Blast? So, you know, there may be some R&D going on over at the Taco Bell headquarters today.
Southern. But
yes.
Will it?
Well, I said, we can find out. We have the technology.
Yes. See, I see Baja Blast as more of a Chinar pairing or like something a little bit more earthy to kind of complement that. Baja Blast is the like electric blue one, right? The one like the color that doesn't occur naturally in nature.
Yeah, I assume. Baja Blast, Braulio Blast? I don't know. We gotta workshop this thing.
I mean, it, like, You know, my favorite flavor sometimes is blue. And, you know, like when you have like a Marlin cocktail or a blue Hawaiian, like it doesn't matter what you put in it. It tastes like blue when you see blue. And
right.
And I don't do caffeine. So like I stay away from Mountain Dew, especially Mountain Dew as far as sodas go. But I've tasted it before and it tastes like blue and it's a great thing. I don't know if I would go like the whole Amaro route personally. I'd probably go to more like a tropical kind of tiki vibe with Baja Blast. Just that's probably where I would start. It'd probably be like, honestly, it would be like Agricole rum is where maybe I would start. But, you know, there are some great Amaro that work with those rums too in the tiki kind of tropical world too.
And Baja Zotti does roll off the tongue really, really nicely.
So. Not with Ramazzotti. Yeah, I mean, Ramazzotti kind of tastes like Dr. Pepper to me, like a little bit, you know?
Me so too,
like,
100%.
I think you're onto something there. Baja Zotti.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, continuing this trend of like, you know, bringing the lowbrow highballs, which I'm not a big Mountain Dew fan, but I do love that this just exists. And I love that Mountain Sues has just kickstarted this whole wave of mutations out there. I saw a great one that I haven't gotten a chance to try yet, but I'm very curious about Montefago.
Oh, wow.
I think if Mountain Sues is the coronavirus, Montefago is the Omicron variant. Like, I am very curious to see how this concept has twisted itself into this.
I mean, it stacks up in my brain. You know, Fuego is very orangey. So
well, they make a bunch of different flavors, but I guess the orange is
bad. No, I'm talking about Fago. I'm talking about the grape soda that is weirdly tied to the Insane Clown Posse. That's the one that I'm talking about.
All right, I'm definitely thinking of the wrong thing. Wow.
You're thinking of Fanta.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Fanta. Yeah, you're right.
You know, it's like these highballs are kind of like they're kind of taking over for the 50-50 shots in a way. You know what I mean? It's like the new 50-50 shot where we were mixing like, you know, Mezcal and Montenegro and, you know, the Hard Start, which is 50-50 Fernet and Branca Menta and like all these different shots that were kind of popping up, the CIA. It's kind of where all the attention has been redirected to with bartenders from the 50-50 shot to this like lowbrow highball.
Yeah.
And again, I love it. You know, it's what we were talking about earlier about like people just want comfort, you know, people want fun. I think I remember saying like we did our last show before Memorial Day when a lot of restrictions were being eased and we were going into it was just the heady days, the beginning of hot vax summer. And I think we ended our show by being like, remember fun? Yeah. Like, do you remember how enjoyable fun used to be? Like, go out and let yourself have a little bit of it because you've earned it. And that's why I like these. You know, they're not snooty. They're not super, you know, you don't have to have a real complex knowledge of what goes into these things. Frankly, I'm pretty sure that what goes into Mountain Dew is a hell of a lot more complicated than what goes into Sue's. But also, it's a nice way to sort of take a lot of these fairly, you know, the things that we love that we traffic in, which nonetheless can be fairly inaccessible to a wider audience, and kind of bring them down to, you know, take the fire of Sue's up from Mount Olympus and bring it down to everybody else. And I fucking love that. And I hope that it's a trend that continues.
Absolutely, man. You know, I'll tell you something too, as someone who, like most people, has been like, you know, doing a lot of home drinking during this time. yeah. You know, I drink whiskey highballs. I just drink, you know, bourbon and soda, like, way more than I should. But the thing is, what I really realized is that with these highballs, with whatever one you like, it's really nice to not have to do the dishes. Like you don't have to wash your shaker tin or your mixing glass. It's like you just build it in the glass and you're done, you know? And I kind of want to redirect that or just kind of build on it a little bit more to something that actually is a cocktail, like a classic cocktail. But you know, when we had recently on the show, Lacey Hawkins from Monkey 47 was on, and she was talking a lot about building martinis on the rocks, maybe in a big mason jar. And you know, if you build a martini on the rocks in a mason jar, you've got like three martinis in that mason jar. So I mean, but and you can like kind of over garnish them and do all this fun stuff, but then at the end of the day, it's like you don't have to do the dishes. And you know, that to me is really fun. So the highball thing's been a lot of fun, but I've taken Lacey's advice and I've been making my martinis on the rocks, and man, it's so nice to not have to clean up after yourself.
For years and years and years, my pat answer for people who would say, why is the Negroni at your bar so much better than the one I make at home? I would just respond by saying, because I do the dishes, you know? Yeah. So I totally understand that sentiment. Like, you know, take a little bit of pressure off yourself. You're trying to enjoy something.
And, you know, Lacey was totally right. And it's something I guess I didn't really see. I haven't seen for a long time, but I remember when I first started bartending, like almost 20 years ago, I remember guests coming in and ordering their martinis on the rocks. And I, you know, to me, it wasn't weird at all, because it just, so many people ordered them that way. And then, you know, as the years went on and it became kind of like kind of gauche or whatever, like it was like, it kind of fell out of popularity. But then when Lacey brought it up, I was like, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It keeps martini is just ice cold the entire way through. There's nothing worse than like a warm martini. So I like it. I think, and it kind of really, honestly, that goes back to what we're talking about altogether with like just comfort, you know. It's comforting to have like that ice cold drink. It's comforting to have something that's just simple and to the point, like a Mountain Sue's. But then it's also really comforting sitting down and enjoying that drink and not looking over at the sink full of like bar tools. You know, my role is, I've said this in different ways, I'm still kind of working on it, but if there are dishes in the sink, it's not time to drink. So like, And really what that means is like, it's really more for cooking, but drink and sink rhyme. So if there are dishes in the sink, then I can't start cooking, you know, like
same. Oh, I'm definitely the same about that.
Yeah. Everything has to be, not only the sink has to be empty, but like the drying rack has to be empty for me to start cooking. Exactly. I need like a just completely clean, crisp area, you know? And so, you know, a lot of times, you know, I clean as I go when I cook. And cause I, you know, that's how I work as a bartender. It's like, I'm cleaning as I go. So every time that, you know, and every bartender should do this, like they should rinse their tins, you know, whatever it is, and reset between every round. And I've seen so many bartenders who just like throw all their tools in the sink. And then every time they need to make a drink, they have to like wash the tools first. There's nothing worse than having to like clean up before you actually start working. You know, when you come in,
it's work, the night work before you can get to work.
Yeah. It's like when you come in the night before and the bartender kind of scumbagged you on like, you know, not burning the ice or, you know, like all the dishes are like nothing's polished, you know? So I think the comfort of the simplicity of honestly the duty, you know, the chores and the duty of cleanliness, you know, keep it simple. And that way it's going to be more comfortable. Right.
Yeah. Right.
Mountain Sue's is what I'm saying, guys.
Yeah. Mountain Sue's, let's get it on.
That is our person of the year here at the Speakeasy. It's Mountain Sue's.
It beats Time's person of the year. All right, I'll go back down the negative road. Well, guys, it's been, you know, a tumultuous year, but I think we've done our very best to keep on bringing good stories out to our listeners and bringing great guests into our virtual studio. You know, again, if there's a silver lining, I think that's a big one. We've been able to have on guests from further away. We've been able to have Damon in the studio with us as often as he can make it, because we're virtual. And I don't think we're going to stop doing it virtually. I miss being in the studio, but
I miss the pizza at Roberta's. Honestly,
well, there's that. Of course, you know, and being in that metal transit box in the middle of the summer, that's always good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like cooking. You know, but as much as I miss being in there, I think the show has really had an opportunity to grow and expand and be better by being virtual. So, you know, I don't expect that we're going to go, I know some of the shows are going back to studio, but I don't think we're gonna.
Yeah. And that's fine. And you know, when we can, we'll do it when, you know, we're all in the same city, but you know, like we're in three different cities right now. This is awesome that we get to do this. Agreed. So, you know, it is as fun as it has been over the years being in the studio and building our bar in there, which is also a lot of fun, and eating pizza at Roberta's and just, you know, being together. That's the most important part, right?
Of course.
It's great that we actually have this option. And you're correct that being able to have a lot of these guests that don't necessarily have to be in New York City to be with us has been just really wonderful. And the expansion of the show has really been, you know, we've been all over the world this year.
Yeah.
I mean, we really have. So we're very lucky in that. Also, I will say that outside of this being, you know, our year end roundup show, which is, you know, as I mentioned, world famous, and, you know, people tend to take this day off from work. They use their PTO so they can really tune into the show. They want to hear it live and not listen to it on, you know, the podcast websites. But, you know, when we come back from our holiday break, it will be, and it's my favorite number, because I'm a big prime numbers guy, but also we're in the double digits. It will be our 11-year anniversary show.
Yeah. Insanity.
So wow. That's something. And we got back-to-back blockbuster episodes, guys.
I guess that's important to mention as well. This is our last show of the year. We'll be back in January and we'll be ready to host folks from all over the world and talk about all things that are contributing to the world of drinks and drink culture. And I look forward to another great year of hanging out with you guys virtually and soon enough again in person.
Absolutely. You know, also I'll say this, you know, I love how, you know, I just kind of want to gush a little bit, but you know, I always tell people during the holiday season or when it's my birthday, I'm like, don't send me gifts. Because like book a reservation, you know, I'm more about experiences, and I know that we haven't actually had the time to spend with each other, but I'm going to be in Brooklyn next month, and I'm sure we're going to get to do that, and we're going to have to make up for a lot of lost time. I will drink a Mountain Sue's. I will chance my health and my non-caffeinated lifestyle to have a Mountain Sue's made by its inventor and creator. How often do you get to do that? You know, unless you're at like Long Island Bar having a Cosmopolitan, you don't get to have these iconic, like probably the most popular drink in our time made by its creator. So we're gonna have some great experiences next month, guys.
Cool. We'll go get a penicillin at the new Temple Bar.
Sure. So that's it for the Speakeasy this week and this year.
Yeah.
Tune in to Heritage Radio Network for many more programs like this one. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station. And guys, love you. Cheers. Happy holidays.
Cheers, everybody.
Happy holidays. Cheers.
Stay safe.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.